100 days on the place, yeah, man. It's a kick it, you know. That's right.
Yeah, me rolling and rock it to the beat, and me love the sound.
Oh, Chess, you can mess with the sound. Better grab your girl, your posse, and gather round.
Yeah, me rolling and bobbing and going like a mad man. Oh, the man got the sweet day off and 19 no long, so me say.
Hey, hey, Digital Sister back. Hope you had a great week, and I hope you're enjoying the summer. Well, first of all, let me say welcome back to my many friends who are downloading the podcast in Haifa. I'm so glad to have you back tuning in, and I tend to think that's because a bit of the ceasefire has taken effect, and that's allowing people to come back and get on their computers to network and podcast. So I'm really glad to have my listeners in Haifa back, and I thank you for tuning in and passing the podcast and sharing it with your other friends in Haifa, Israel. Thank you for that. And of course, thank you for my great fan base in the Denver, Colorado area. Love that you're tuning in. Love that you're passing it around. But let's get started. I'd love for you to just kind of send me your opinions and notes. You know, I watched Spike Lee's When the Levees Broke last night, the two-part series, but it was four acts. I mean, it was just so powerful because I recall watching the news, as many of us did, when the hurricane hit the Gulf Coast last year around August 29th. But what put it into perspective for me watching Spike Lee's documentary was the amount of time, you know, the people are gathering at the Superdome and they're gathering at the convention center and all of that. The storm hits and, you know, they're still waiting. And it was like days before the federal government came and started doing rescue efforts. And remember, and that's why it's so it just makes you so angry that people were treated like that here in this country, as if they were not citizens of the United States. So here you have people in the heat of New Orleans, because it's hot down there. I've been there, went to the Essence Festival in 2004 before the hurricane. You know, you have babies who, of course, need their formulas. You have people who have to go to the bathroom. And you know, not everybody could go to the bathroom in the Superdome. So I'm sure you could see all kinds of horrible things. Women might have been menstruating. You know, they didn't have the articles that they needed to deal with that. So the news painted one picture, but watching Spike Lee's video, it really, I think, painted a picture of how desperate the people were. And when they showed the insensitive comments from Barbara Bush, you know, saying, oh, you know, they don't want to leave because of the hospitality in Texas. But, you know, most of the people were underprivileged and, you know, sitting around in the Houston Astrodome or the Superdome, you know, she's saying, oh, well, they're doing much better. This is probably working out real good for them. Just the total arrogance and just not a clue for looking at how people are being treated. And the other thing that struck me in his documentary was how the whites who lived in the lower Ninth Ward and areas where it probably was predominantly populated by African Americans, it seemed to me as I watched it that they were absolutely stunned at how they were being treated. There was one woman, she was white, who looked at the foundation where her house used to be, and she described how when she was trying to get help from the insurance companies and all of that, she had to prove, you know, that she owned this house and everything's gone. And it put her in the same situation that many of the African Americans were treated. And based on what I saw, you know, they didn't like being lumped in to that group and being treated the way that they were treated. So it was very interesting that they were experiencing exactly what the African Americans were experiencing. And I think it was also great how he showed the culture of New Orleans and how important it is and how the spirit and the soul of New Orleans, you know, they were knocked down but not totally out. But it also shows that here it is a year later, and so much of the devastation is still there. It hasn't really changed much, and the wrangling that is going on in the lower Ninth Ward, because that's where the port is and the sea areas are. That's where a lot of the oil drills and things like that are set up, and that's why the people who are trying to grab the land are basically telling people, you know, it's not going to be renovated, or, you know, sell us your land, whatever. But they're now in a situation of a powerful land grab, because the people who are the builders and all of that, the powers that be, they want that land so that they can build and move out the poor people. And so now you have that going on. And it just is such a devastating effect. You've wiped out wealth for many families, because, you know, the home is the biggest investment that most people make. I mean, personal belongings wiped away, your whole sense of who you are as a family and all of that. And I think that kind of got lost, I think, in some of the news reporting, but I think it really hit home as you watched the documentary. And even Soledad O'Brien, a newscaster for CNN, was down there kind of at the very beginning of when, you know, the hurricane hit and the aftermath, and there was a dead body somewhere. And she went back to New York, you know, to do her anchoring job, and had to go back down there, and she could not believe it, because that body was still there. And also, I think the horror of how many bodies were just floating around or sitting, or the number of people that just died in the Superdome from the heat, that poor man whose mother just died, and they had to wheel her in a chair and put something over her, but kind of line them up with the rest of their bodies. It was just incredible, and it should make everybody very angry. And I'm really surprised that there isn't some kind of rallying or uprising, you know, at this treatment, because, you know, that's a very, I think, beautiful city. And if it can happen there and people don't care, it can happen, you know, anywhere in this country, and it can happen again. So I think, unfortunately, I think the citizens of this country were just so complacent. You know, we're just not as vocal and upset about things as we should be. And then hence, you know, the government just continues to act as if nothing is going on. And the other thing I learned about the documentary, I'm just talking about this because I'm so passionate, was the fact that you have all these gas and oil rigs there, and they're taking, you know, the oil, and it's 3 miles off of the Louisiana coast, and 30% of our oil and gas is pumped from New Orleans. And yet, the gas companies are, and they're paying the government, and the government's getting all the commissions and fees and all that, and not one piece of money is being sent to the state of Louisiana. I mean, that's just outrageous to me. And they have oil rigs and things off the coast of, you know, Texas and Mississippi and all that, and those states get paid, you know, commissions and things like that. But why is it that Louisiana isn't getting them? You know, that's just so crazy. And then one of the people in the documentary said, if Louisiana were getting that money from the oil companies, everybody would be in good shape in Louisiana. They wouldn't be the poor state that they are. So I think there's so much that has to be looked at. There's so much political wrangling, and there's just so much nonsense. You know, the levees, they put a little Band-Aid solution on it, yet the gentleman from the Army Corps of Engineers is busy talking about how, you know, great job they've done, what they've done to bolster the levees, but everybody's telling you that's not the case. So there was this big disconnect going on between the powers that be and the people. And the other thing to find out is, even though the Corps of Army Engineers has done basically a shoddy job with the levees, you know, they cannot be sued. So they're getting away with so much. So I think what people should do is look at that again, and and just think about all of the things that are going on and the politics that are going on, really for the soul of New Orleans. And as one gentleman said, the new New Orleans that they're trying to rebuild is going to be very different. It will be very white, it will be very gentrified, and it's going to lose some of the flavor. And you can't have New Orleans without people of color to be the soul of New Orleans. So it's just going to be very interesting to see how that all pans out. But again, an excellent documentary, so much to see, so much to think about, and still, they need still so much help down there because not a lot has changed. But let me shift gears a little bit and talk about the comments from Bryant Gumbel, which I find very interesting. He made a comment on his recent show, Real Sports, last Tuesday, saying that before Tagliabue cleans out his office to retire, that he should show the new successor where they keep Gene Upshaw's leash. And I thought, what is he talking about? Why would he even slam another black man like that? See, that's the problem with Brian. Brian doesn't think he's African-American. I know he's Creole, but he doesn't think he is. And I thought, wow, how tacky for another African-American man to say something so negative and disparaging. And the point of the matter is that with that kind of comment, you know, it's putting into jeopardy his possibility of doing play-by-play broadcasting. But then also, if you're feeling like that, I mean, what does that say? I mean, there's so few African Americans in those positions that are even close to being there. And, you know, he has the nerve to slam one who's there. So, you know, I wonder what that's all about. And I think, Brian, you know, sometimes, you know, you don't always have to say everything you feel. And that's where his arrogance is. But, you know, I just thought that's pretty crappy for him to say that about another African American who, you know, has been doing a decent job. You know, just not cool at all. But let me talk a little bit about what's going on. There's this whole new trend going on. It's called Patriot Pastors. And I'm talking about this because I want you all to be aware of what's going on. This group, they're called Patriot Pastors. And what they're doing is they're gaining ground in this country because you see, you know, little things about intolerance all the time in the news now. But what they're doing is they're gaining ground and inserting intolerance into some of the laws of the land here. And I think that's pretty scary. Versus what Martin Luther King did when he was alive. He used spirituality as a force to change laws that, you know, kind of spawned the same kind of intolerance. But they're totally missing the boat with Dr. King's message and totally all about their agenda. So let's talk about what Patriot Pastors is all about. They basically have been called together by influential ultra-conservative evangelical preachers, and their goal is to transform America by using vast church networks and resources to turn out the vote for candidates who want to criminalize abortion, who want to persecute gay people into oblivion, and just about any other thing that would speak of being tolerant. And if you are someone who disagrees with their philosophy, you're attacked as being evil. And they're not even looking at the fact that if you are a person of religion, I mean, shouldn't you be looking at how to be tolerant and how to teach your people in your congregation how to be tolerant? But no. That's exactly what's going on. And it's sad because, and they're making room with some of the political people that are running for office right now. In Ohio, we have a black man who's the Ohio Secretary of State, Ken Blackwell, who's a real ultra-conservative right-wing Republican, but they're all trying to paint the picture just because he's a black man that he's for the common people. Not true, not true, not true. Because what has happened is these patriot pastors have, they've lended their support to Ken Blackwell's, his campaign. And hence, they're bringing and mixing that religion and politics. And again, if you don't agree with what these ultra-conservative people say, you're evil, you're just a sinner. And you see that comes from the top down, because you see that with the administration. If anybody says anything against the president, his policies, you're branded as non-patriotic, how dare you criticize the president, blase, blase, blase. But you see, that is the tone and the tenor that this administration has brought to this country, and it's really bringing out a great level of intolerance on so many levels. And the sad part is that it's always hidden and couched in religion, which is supposed to be about love, not hate. So I just want to put that out there for my listeners, and think when you start hearing particular comments, just stop and think and wonder where that may be come from before you rush to judgment to support or not support. But just take a moment to just think about where some of these comments come from, and what the underlying agendas are. And don't just follow blindly without taking a moment to think, because that's what this podcast is all about. I bring you information that I want you to think about, to at least consider. I don't really care, if you're right or left. I don't really care. I just want you at least to hear information and at least to discern what's good and what's not, and discern where any messages of intolerance are coming from, because it's always clothed and in the sheep, underneath. So just be aware that we have people who are really out there trying to wrestle your mind and take away your freedoms based on their agenda. So keep aware and keep vigilant about that sort of thing. Now, on the next note, I like to add a little information about the nonprofits, which I think is very interesting. And again, we're seeing another blend of religion coming into this. Best-selling author Rick Warren, he's the guy that wrote The Purpose-Driven Life. That's just been a phenomenal bestseller all over the world. But in any event, he has kind of partnered or will be involved with Ricard, I think it's Feacham, who oversees billions of dollars of AIDS spending and heads up the Global Fund to Fight AIDS. This is also the organization that Bill Gates and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is given that $500 million to do AIDS research and to promote innovative AIDS research. But get back to what I'm talking about with this whole religious thing. Apparently, Rick Warren has, he has a church in Saddleback Church in Lake Forest, California, and he claims to have a network of some 400,000 churches of various denominations, but they share a similar social concern. In any event, he's going to team up with the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, and he basically has said that churches are the biggest networks. He can deliver X amount of people to make a dent in this problem. My concern is, we know how AIDS is spread. We know all of the myths that go along with it. And we also know that you just can't tell people not to have sex, and then that's going to be the way to stop AIDS, because we're dealing with human behavior. But the other thing I I worry about with Rick Warren being involved in this is that he believes the only way to stop AIDS is to, and I quote, save sex for marriage and train men to respect women. Everyone knows this is a woman's pandemic driven by behavior in men. I just think that's just so unrealistic and naive, and I tend to wonder, will he be, you know, weaving in biblical teachings based on how he feels to people who basically just want to get information as to how to prevent HIV infection. So, you know, I wonder what, as I just spoke about, what his underlying agenda is. Yes, he claims that they want to do, they're doing some work in Rwanda with this, but I just wonder what the message is. If you're trying to couch it in a message of abstinence, which we all know does not work, or are you going to talk to people realistically and get them to address their behaviors? And are you going to spend time really talking to the men who you are talking about and really talking about teaching them how to respect women? I mean, I really would like to see how that's going to play out, and I really would like to know what his true message is and what the underlying reason is for him to team up with that. So again, you know, keep your eyes open and look at these things and look at what agendas are and see what's going on. But it's kind of interesting that he has teamed up with a gigantic fund to do this. You know, and I wonder why has he not partnered with an organization in the United States who might be doing something like that, or smaller organizations. So, you know, his agenda is to be very, very international, and he's found a good forum to do that. And so, again, so you have to wonder what people's agendas are and where their sincerity really is. But let's go to our rap watch and talk about that. Now, Lil Wayne, he's a rapper in Atlanta, was arrested on some drug charges. And he grew up in New Orleans, as a matter of fact. But, you know, that has happened with him. So I hope that, you know, he can come out of that and just get back to making some music, you know. And then we see that Busta Rhymes was arrested, but he was released. But see, his arrest, I believe firmly, was tied to the fact that he's into that no snitching policy, and he is not talking to the police about what happened that night that Israel Raymond was shot outside of that studio, his bodyguard. He is still not talking about what he saw, and the cops are very anxious to talk to him. So I think, you know, with Busta, they're probably just going to, you know, try to keep finding things to get him into the station so that they can eventually try to question him. So, you know, he's got to be, keep his P's and Q's, you know, easily open there so he doesn't fall into any traps, you know, that they may be trying to set up to get information out of him. So, again, he's got to kind of stay on top of things because, you know, they want to talk to him and he's not talking, he's not snitching, and that is probably what's pissing them off, you know. But very interesting indeed. Now let's talk about Jay-Z, because unlike, you know, the two rappers I just talked about, who, you know, they're performers and all that, but I don't think they do anything, you know, socially conscious, we move to Jay-Z, who, you know, a month or two ago had a run-in with the president or the chairman of the company that makes the Cristal champagne, who, as if you didn't know, the French owner of the Cristal champagne company was lamenting the fact that his product was, you know, linked to rappers, you know, black rappers, and then he just wasn't happy about that because they're considered, you know, unsavory. You know, he'd much rather just have it be associated with, let's just say it like it is, with wealthy white socialites, you know. And so to his credit, and I talked about this in a previous podcast, when Jay-Z heard about that, he pulled the Cristal from his clubs in New York and Atlanta. And let's not joke around. These bottles go from anywhere from $400 to 600 $6 a bottle in a nightclub. But he pulled the Cristal out of his clubs and replaced it with Perry Jouet and some other champagnes who, you know, didn't have a problem with rappers liking it. And he, you know, was pissed off about that, but he's taken a more global perspective, and he has kind of gotten involved with the United Nations and is talking about the whole issue of water and wanting to do something and bring attention to the world about water conservation and what's going on. Now, one of the things that's going on with water, which I found very interesting, is there are water barons out there who are already starting to privatize water. And guess who's going to be the people who suffer the most? You got it. It's going to be poor countries, poor locations, poor villages who can't afford to pay for the water. They're going to be left out. And that came to be because in South Africa, the Dolphin Coast in 2000, there was an outbreak of cholera, which was directly related to the fact that they, and this is an area that, you know, it's full of tin roof shanties, but they made these people pay for water. And so, of course, many of them could not afford to have clean water, so the water was cut off. And so what happened? They were forced to drink water from streams, from lakes that carried animal and human waste, and God knows what else in there. And that's what broke out a cholera epidemic. And that epidemic did not end until 2002. So let's say that's 2 years of a cholera epidemic. You know, some people died from that, you know? And that wasn't the end of it. It seems that many of these private water companies are backed with money from the World Bank. And the perverse reasoning is that if people are forced to pay for the full price of a glass of clean water, they won't take it for granted. I mean, that's like disgusting. Water is here for all of us to share. It's not for the powers that be to dictate who's going to get water. So on that note, I say, look out, because over the next couple of years, you're going to see more and more people investing in water stocks, and they're doing this really in the countries who can least afford this. But you're beginning to see the privatization of water, which is a commodity that we all need. So just keep your eyes open, and I thought that was just a very interesting thing to learn about. But in any event, Jay-Z has taken on the project of water conservation and talking about the need to make clean water available, you know, all over the world. Because I didn't know that, but some 4,500 children die each day from diseases that could be prevented if they simply had access to clean water. And that, you know, that is his mission. So what I'm hoping is, not only has he brought this attention to us, I'm hoping that he will actually, you know, get with some projects with the United Nations and go build some wells, go see where you can set up water filtration or something and make water, clean water, available to those people who already suffer so much because they don't have clean water. So I hope he, you know, does more with it. And I think it's great that he's taken on a good cause like this. And I like the fact that, you know, Jay-Z has matured. He's one of, there's a few that have, but he's matured. You know, he's not just caught up in the consumption with his songs. He's beginning to mature, and he's looking at things. You know, one company dissed him. He, you know, dealt with that, getting them out of his clubs, and now he's taking on a global look, and I hope, and I think that's wonderful, and I hope that more entertainers, more rappers in particular, who just get caught up in stupid stuff, could just open up their eyes a bit more and see, you know, particular projects that they could lend their celebrity to, their fame, and their wealth to make things better. Bono does that for the African countries, to get the the other countries to remove the debt because these countries cannot afford to pay things back. So I would hope and I would love to see more African-American rappers follow that suit. And kudos to Jay-Z for maturing and getting a much global outlook on the whole issue of water. So I think that's great. And my other rappers out there, I hope you can find some projects to lend your celebrity to, because there's a lot out here that people need, you know, and rather than just consuming and buying your next big watch and all that stuff, you can be doing something powerful with your money and with your celebrity. So I hope more and more of them will follow Jay-Z's example. I think he's just a shining light, and I think there's so much that we're going to see from him. I'm excited about that. Let's talk about Radio One. Isn't that something? That's the radio network that Kathy Hughes, a black woman, started back in the 80s. It's home of the Tom Joyner Show. But it's just wonderful that she was able to, you know, find a niche and just blow it out the water. And 25 years later, it's over a billion dollar business that she has created. And she has tapped into something and provides information that we just don't hear. As I was talking about at the beginning of the podcast with Spike Lee and his documentary When the Levees Broke, the only place you really hear them talking about this is on the Tom Joyner Show. You flip around the major networks and CNN and all that, they are not saying a word about this. Thank God for Radio One. Thank God for the Tom Joyners, because we're hearing information that, you know, isn't going to be heard on CNN. And in fact, Maxine Waters, who's the congresswoman from California in the Crenshaw area district, and she even said that. She said, you know, she told Tom when she was on the show the other day to thank him for having her on. She said because the Sunday morning, you know, political shows, they don't invite many of the African-American politicians on. It's the same old other people on there, but they don't invite, you know, people like Maxine Waters on. So she was really thankful to have that venue with Tom Joyner. And see, that's why I'm doing the podcast, because, you know, we talk about things that other people really aren't really spending a lot of time talking about. So that's why we do what we do. So congratulations to Kathy Hughes and Radio One for 25 years of broadcasting and bringing information to us that would otherwise not get to us. And you know, much success, and we hope that, you know, there'll be even more powerful media things coming out of Radio One. Well, I think I've chatted enough this time. Again, thanks for tuning in. I'm going to find some more interesting things for us to talk about, and I look forward to you passing the podcast around and just, you know, helping me grow even more. So I'll be back with you in a couple days. Have a great week, and thanks for tuning in. Digital Sister signing out.
See, I'm a little bit of a mess with this song. The West Side.